Let's all have a moment of silence. Thank you to my people on the door who are letting people in. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference, which is why I need God. I lack wisdom. The first definition I wanted to read this morning was insanity. This is found on page 8, 9, 30, 37, 40, 56, 66, page 107, 154, 218, 313, 320, 412, 455, and 550. I think they're trying to tell us something. That's just me. All right, so we're picking up in more about alcoholism on page 37. And there is method to my madness. The reason I mentioned the word insanity because we are starting on page 37, and it is mentioned here. So I'm going to screen share page 37. Grab your big book. I'm reading from the fourth edition. And page 37, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. I wonder if they meant for it to rhyme. how can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? And the definition for insanity, as found in the Little Big Book Dictionary, and concordance for included words, which we absolutely love in this meeting. Insanity, extreme senselessness or foolishness, delusion, delirium, irrationality. From the big book, it mentions it here, page 37, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? From the personal stories, it references page 550. Rationalization is giving a socially acceptable reason for socially unacceptable behavior. And socially unacceptable behavior is a form of insanity. And I'll give you a brief personal example of that. So, in a morning meeting that I attend, I was getting frustrated with someone constantly qualifying by their outside addiction. And even though they'd been talked to personally about it, they would continue to qualify that way. So my insanity is justifying and rationalizing and giving a socially acceptable reason for my need to correct that person publicly. That's my part. I can't take someone else's inventory. So I'm going to focus on my insanity and my irrational behavior, or my rationalization is giving a socially acceptable reason for socially unacceptable behavior. That came to mind today for me. Where else does it say? It implies persistent mental disorder in one who formerly had mental health. Lunacy. Madness, mania, and dementia, an acquired mental disorder. So those are some definitions of the word insanity. So let's continue on with our reading this morning on page 37. I like this Cleveland style big book because it has little boxes around things, and this box is called the Untreated Mind Box. So this is what my thinking is like when my alcoholism goes untreated. The insanity wins out, you know, and I can ask myself questions throughout the day. And that's what my inventory is about. So I have a spot check inventory, like I just did this morning after the meeting. And then I have a nightly inventory where I go through my whole day and see if there's anything that I maybe need to make an amends for, correct my behavior, talk to my sponsor, you know, talk to another person about that behavior. Whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. How can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? And what they're talking about here is this guy who we just read about, who had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were readily, or sorry, easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. So as we get further and further removed away from that last drink, we have to also bring this spiritual way of living into our everyday life. It's not just about whether, that insane thinking is going to win out and we're going to pick up a drink. It's about the insane thinking that justifies our actions and our behaviors in the day that we're in. I'm going to continue to read on. Next paragraph. You may think this is an extreme case. To us, it is not far-fetched, for this kind of thinking has been characteristic of every single one of us. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences. But there was always, and I have this highlighted and underlined, so if you have a pen and you're following along, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, so it's happening at the same time, this mental phenomenon that is telling us something different than the sound reasoning. You have that voice, don't do it. This is crazy. Don't pick up that first drink. Don't go to the bar. All my friends are going to the bar tonight, but I'm 3 months sober. Wow, that sounds like a good idea. Don't do it. This is the parallel sound reasoning that's running concurrent with that, congruent, concurrent with that, and inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. I'm sure you can think of your own experiences. I can think of, oh, it's a birthday party. I gotta go. They'll miss me if I don't go to this bar for their birthday. What would sane thinking tell me if I'm newly sober? Perhaps I drop off a card and a gift the day before, or I say, I'd really love to celebrate your birthday. Is there some one-on-one time we could, edge out with each other? But no, my trivial excuse is going to override that sane thinking. Or I might even call my sponsor and ask for some suggestions and then push all of them aside. Why listen to the person with experience? Why listen to the person who has stayed sober for 28 years when I could make decisions on my own? Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. And we all know what happens when the insane idea runs out. More insanity follows. The next day, we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity how it could have happened. And I think this is the frustrating part for many of the people who we leave behind in our wake, in the wreckage of our very existence. Those people think they're a liar. Like, or they're insane, which is probably more truthful. But we mean it. Oftentimes, when we say, I'm never going to drink again, in that moment, we mean it. When we try to control our drinking, we have that sincerity, that earnestness, that we really think in our brains that it's possible. And so we're confused as to why it happens. But if you flip over back to page 24, I'll give you a second to get there. We go to that highlighted box in italics, and hopefully you have a circle, a square, and a whole bunch of highlighter around. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago, for some of us, a day ago. We are without defense against the first drink. It's our thinking. The insane idea wins out. In some circumstances, we have deliberately Gone, we have gone out deliberately to get drunk, feeling ourselves justified by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. Can anyone in here relate? There's going to be time in the last 15 minutes of the meeting, to talk about that, to share about that, because I'm sure, that many of us can relate to that. I have drank over hurt feelings, 100%. I've drank because people didn't behave the way I thought they should. I've drank because of what I like to now call false expectations. Those are the expectations I put on other people, how I believe, how I think they should behave. And when they let me down because they didn't get their script on how they should behave, they hurt my feelings. They let me down. I go into self-pity, or I get angry, and then I justify my behavior. And my sponsor used to say, "You got a case of the fuck it's." Yes, I did. I chose. I made a choice, a conscious choice. Fuck this, I'm gonna drink. And I did that after my first 2 years of sobriety because I didn't think the promises came true for me. Because I hadn't actually read the book and I didn't realize that they were outlined in a very specific and clear way in the book. And the promises in my mind were quite different than the promises as outlined in the book. The promises in my mind were get your girlfriend back, have a successful radio career, make $1 million, drive a nice car, have a home, have a cottage. Those were my promises. And none of those were coming true. The girlfriend and I separated. I didn't get anything I wanted. I was in and out of work and then bankruptcy, unemployment, all that great stuff. So screw AA. I got the fuck it's and I drank again. And that insane thinking won out and I justified my choice. The book continues, but even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. And I'm so grateful for the way this big book is written today, which is funny because when I first came in, I had a complaint and I had an argument and I had a reason to debate everything, especially the way it was written, the wording, the language, the he's, the God, everything I wanted to change about this book. And I'm so grateful nobody listened. Thank God GSO returns letters to sender. No, they don't, but they tell me that, that's not how things work. Because, yes, I did write General Service Office with some of my brilliant ideas, because that's just who I am. But I'm so grateful for the way this is worded today, because now I can go back. When I went out that first time, I left AA and I went out. And I drank myself into a deeper, darker bottom. Eventually, I would bump into these old AAs. One of them had been my previous sponsor. And they would point out that word, insane. And I didn't like it. But when we sat down and talked, and I was a little bit more broken than I'd been before, and I had a little bit more willingness to listen, I started to understand that my behavior was just that. It was insane when I looked at my life and how further down I'd gone into that hole, into that pit of despair, into self-pity, into depression. One of the things that I had learned to ask myself is this behavior now benefiting me? How about a resentment, a self-righteous moment of anger? What does it bring to my life? Am I benefiting from these thoughts, these actions, and this behavior? Most likely the answer is no. But if I continue to act on it or sit in it, if it's self-pity, or act on it, if it's self-righteous anger or jealousy or bitterness, then that's insane behavior. I'm going to read that sentence again. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for Esprit was insanely insufficient in the light of what always happened. In other words, we have enough evidence, don't we, to prove that this is not a sane choice to pick up a drink, to throw in the towel, to say, fuck it. We now see that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, oh, and here's another qualifier for us alcoholics. Do I drink casually or do I drink deliberately? I drank for an effect. I drank for an end result. To forget, to oblivion, to blot out my present intolerable situation. Sorry, I just lost my spot. We now see that we began to drink, there it is, deliberately instead of casually. There was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrific consequences might be. We just keep highlighting that word insane, insanity, insane thinking. Our behavior as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking, I thought, where are they going with this? And who calls jaywalking anymore? He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. What? What a lunatic. Who gets a thrill from that? Unless you ever saw that movie Crash. It was a very bizarre movie. People who like to, they get off on getting into car accidents. Maybe they would like that. Those kind of thrill seekers. Anyway, for jaywalking, he gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of a friendly warning. Up to this point, you would label him as foolish for having a foolish chap, having queer ideas of fun. Doesn't mean the same thing we think it means today. Another issue I had with the book. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. And isn't that the problem with the friends and the family and the workers and the employers around us? They don't understand us because they're normal and we're not. They think like a normal person. Wow, if drinking causes you that much problem, why do you drink? Yeah, I don't know. Presently, he is hit again and this time has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. So now we're seeing the progressive nature of this crazy jaywalker's thinking. On through the years, this conduct continues, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work. His wife gets a divorce and he is held up to ridicule. He tries every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. Now we're starting to see the correlation between this crazy jaywalker who's doing something so insane, nobody can understand why he keeps doing it, and the alcoholic. The alcoholic who justifies their drinking, justifies their thinking, justifies their behavior, rationalizes against rationalization, and does it anyway, and tries different solutions. Maybe I'll try to limit my drinks. Maybe I'll switch my brand. Maybe I'll leave this person because they're the problem. Maybe I need a different job. Hell, maybe I need a different city or a different province or a different state. We try every known means to get the idea out of our head. He shuts himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways, right? And it's easy to not drink when you're locked up in a straitjacket. And it's easy to not drink when you're locked up in a treatment facility with no access to alcohol. But the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine, or the alcoholic races to the bar, the liquor store, which breaks his back. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? You may think our illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit, if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. Here's another box to highlight. However intelligent we may have been in other respects, where alcohol was involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, but isn't it true? And I have often said I've worked with a lot of people, and some of the most intelligent people are the most difficult to bring to the solution because that intellect can sometimes play against us. Because we always think we know the answer. Go back up to the top of the page where it talks about, or the bottom of the other page where it talks about he had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic. Bottom of page 36. Self-knowledge is not enough. We need outside help. Some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true. Oh, there's the newcomer statement, but it doesn't fully apply. We admit we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellows did. There's the finding what's different between me and you. If I can find just a little bit of wiggle room, I can wiggle myself right out of these rooms. So we admit that we have some of these symptoms, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellows did, nor are we likely to. Well, there we go. We know the future. I don't even know why I'm here if I can already tell the future. For we understand ourselves so well after what you have told us that such things cannot happen again. We have not lost everything in life through drinking, and we certainly do not intend to. Thanks for the information. I can almost see them tipping their hats as they head out the door. Here's another good box to highlight this next couple of sentences. This is a fact. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people. So, a non-alcoholic person, given this type of information, seeing the wreckage that drinking causes in their lives, puts it down and has no problem. They don't obsess over it when they're not drinking. They don't obsess over what other people are drinking and feel sorry for themselves. So why can't I drink like that? They don't look at every party, every social event as a missed opportunity to partake in alcohol. They're just like, okay, yeah, better not do that anymore. Normal person. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavily at the present time, are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as ours were. They don't have the allergy. They don't think like we do. But the actual or potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. This is a point we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize to smash home upon our alcoholic readers, as it has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. Let us take another illustration. So before we get to Fred, this point, which we emphasize and re-emphasize, think about every meeting you go to and we read how it works. Why? Because we're emphasizing and we're re-emphasizing some very important facts about the process, about the program, about the steps that are necessary for the successful consummation of this program, this new way of life. And I'm an alcoholic. I have a thick skull. I have a short memory. I have a fault-finding, forgetful mind, not a fact-finding one. So I need to hear these things over and over and over again. And maybe when I'm new, I'm in that brain fog, you know? I've just dried out. My brain is a little bit squishy because it's full of alcohol. So I need these reminders. And sometimes I think we think these sponsors were tough on us. But what they were trying to do was relate their experience so that we might not have to go through what they did. Maybe we get out a few years earlier than they did. And all they're doing is relating their own bitter experience, maybe to help save us from ours. So Fred, let's see what time is it? Got a few minutes here. Fred is partner in a well-known accounting firm. So first we talked about, I think it was Jim, and now we're talking about Fred. His income is good. He has a fine home, is happily married, and the father of promising children of college age. He has so attractive a personality that he makes friends with everyone. Oh, Fred and I have a lot of common. If ever there was a successful businessman, it is Fred. To all appearance, he is a stable, well-balanced individual. Oh, I love those outside appearances. Yet, he is an alcoholic. We first saw Fred about a year ago in a hospital, where he had gone to recover from a bad case of jitters. It was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Far from admitting he was an alcoholic, he told himself he came to the hospital to rest his nerves. The doctor intimated strongly that he might be worse than he realized. For a few days, he was depressed about his condition. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. Okay, this is important. I want you to go to page 18. We're just going to go back for a second about Fred. Yet he is an alcoholic. And go to the italics, three quarters of the way down the page. It says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, who is properly armed with facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. But until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. All right, back to this reading on this page. He made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. How many times have we made up our mind? It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so in spite of his character and standing. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. We told him what we knew about alcoholism. He was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but he was a long way from admitting that he could do nothing about it himself. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he had acquired, that self-knowledge again, that intellect, that intelligence, would keep him sober the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it. We heard no more of Fred for a while. One day we were told that he was back in the hospital. So what do those good AAs do? They go back to the hospital to visit this guy. They don't give up on him, even though he took their information and said, yeah, thanks for the info. I got this. They go back to the hospital. They visit him again. This time he was quite shaky. He soon indicated he was anxious to see us. The story he told us is most instructive, for here was a chap absolutely convinced he had to stop drinking, who had no excuse for drinking, who exhibited splendid judgment and determination in all his other concerns, yet was flat on his back nevertheless. So an intelligent guy with everything going for him, yet alcohol has beat him. Let him tell you about it. So this is Fred in his own words. I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcoholism, and I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. So again, his intellect, his ego told him, yeah, I know better than you guys. Thanks for the info. I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity which precedes the first drink, right? That justification, that rationalization, or the fuck it's. But I was confident it could not happen to me after what I had learned. I reasoned I was not so far advanced. There's that reasoning, that fallacious reasoning. As you fellows, that I had been usually successful in licking my other personal problems, and that I would therefore be successful where you men failed. Ego. I felt I had every right to be self-confident, that it would only be a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. In this frame of mind, I went about my business, and for a time, all was well. So he's telling himself some lies. Okay, yeah, things are all right. I've got this. I had no trouble refusing drinks and began to wonder if I'd not been making too hard work of a simple matter. So there's that I call that dark passenger in the back of my head. I have a name for that dark passenger, and it tells me things that are untrue, things that are not going to serve me. And if I don't do something about it, for me, it's a spiritual solution. If I don't take that voice to God for some schooling, then that dark voice wins out, and I go back to doing insane things. One day, I went to Washington to present some accounting evidence to a government bureau. I had been out of town before during this particular dry spell, so there was nothing new about that. Physically, I felt fine. Neither did I have any pressing problems or worries. My business came off well. I was pleased and knew my partners would be too. It was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. And the other thing it says here in the margin is sobriety loses its priority. This is why we always say first things first. We have to put sobriety ahead of everything else. We have to put that oxygen mask on ourselves when the plane hits turbulence before you put it on a child. Because if you don't, you'll pass out. It's the same thing with our drinking. If we don't take care of what we need to every day spiritually first, then we're not going to be able to help other people or be there for other people or be of service. In italics, always important stuff to make note of what's in italics and highlight this. I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That was all, nothing more. I can hear the whisper. I can hear that whispered thought. I've had that whispered thought. I ordered a cocktail and my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. Now, remember too, little things like I decided to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. So he's just going to have two, right? That's the idea. That's the thought. That's the thinking. After dinner, I decided to take a walk, right? Ah, a walk. I'll work off some of this alcohol. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me, here's another great idea. A highball would be fine before going to bed. So now two drinks has turned into three. He's justifying it. It's fine. I'm just going to go to bed. So I stepped into the bar. Well, but we're not going to have that drink at home. We're going to go to a bar. And I had one. Clearly, he doesn't have just one. I remember having several more that night and plenty next morning. And in the margin, I've written, allergy is triggered. Once we take that first drink, something happens inside of us that doesn't happen in the normal drinker. It doesn't happen in the non-alcoholic. The allergy is triggered, and we develop the phenomena of craving. And we crave another and another and another. And one is never enough. I remember having several more that night and plenty next morning. I had a shadowy recollection of being in an airplane bound for New York and of finding a friendly taxicab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said and did. So he's on a real bender. He's blacked out. He doesn't remember things. He's making all kinds of crazy decisions. Wonder where his wife went, wonder what he said to his wife on the phone, that it's a taxi cab and not his wife. I'm sure he's making all kinds of terrible choices and phoning the wrong people and saying the wrong things. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering. As soon as I regained my ability to think, so there's an admittance that he now is starting to realize that, I'm not in my right mind when I'm drinking. I went carefully over that evening in Washington, and now he's going to tell us about his insanity. Not only had I been off guard, so right, priority was not alcoholism, sorry, not putting his sobriety first. So he'd been off guard. I had made no fight whatever against the first drink. He didn't call somebody and talk about it. He didn't turn to God and ask for help to have this thought removed. He just gave in to the thought. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, the time and place would come. I would drink again. We're at the top of page 42. They had said that though I did raise a defense now, right? He was at a time raising a bit of a defense. One day it would give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Well, just that did happen and more. For what I had learned of alcoholism did not occur to me at all. So that self-knowledge didn't spring to his mind. I knew from that moment that I had an alcoholic mind. I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. I had never been able to understand people who said that a problem had them hopelessly defeated. I knew then it was a crushing blow. Two of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much, right? Nobody likes to feel foolish. And then asked me if I thought myself alcoholic and if I were really licked this time. We know now, we members of Alcoholics Anonymous, we know they're not laughing at him. They're not laughing at his pain. But the alcoholic in that moment, that's what we think. We think they're mocking us. We think they're laughing at us. But no, they're grinning because they realize Fred has finally hit that bottom. Fred is now at that place where he is going to be able to admit that he is powerless over alcohol. And he has to make that decision himself. No one can make that for him. I had to concede both propositions. They piled on me heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality, such as I had exhibited in Washington, was a hopeless condition. They cited cases out of their own experience by the dozen. This process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. Then they outlined the spiritual answer and program of action, which 100 of them had followed successfully, right? We now know it's hundreds of thousands, millions, though I had been only nominal, that I had been only a nominal churchman. Their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow, but the program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. Don't we all think that when we first get here? You want me to do what? You want me to pray every day? You want me to meditate? I'm supposed to right my wrongs, take responsibility for my actions, make amends, write an inventory? Oh, this sounds like a lot of work. It meant I would have to throw several lifelong conceptions out of the window. That was a hard one for me. Replacing old ideas with new. That was a hard one for me. And apparently it was hard for Fred too. He says that was not easy. But the moment I made up my mind to go through with the process, I had the curious feeling that my alcoholic condition was relieved, as in fact it proved to be. So he had that awakening, that moment of awakening, where that obsession starts to be lifted once he makes the decision. Quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. So that's the solution to the problem. So the problem is the disease of alcoholism, that I'm powerless over it, that my life had become unmanageable. The solution is step two, finding a power greater than myself, and step three, turning my will and my life over to the care of that power. Spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I have since, top of page 43, been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying, and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. My old manner of life was by no means a bad one, but I would not exchange its best moments for the worst I have now. I would not go back to it, even if I could. And that's something. And I would ask you to ask yourself that question. Would I go back to my old way of life if I could? And if the answer is, yeah, I think I would, then I would suggest that you might have some more work to do. in this program. I'm going to stop there. We have 20 minutes, and I would like to hear from you. Oh, I see somebody's got their hand up already. Joy, come on in.
Hi, Lisa. And wow, I really want to thank you for this study. Oh, you asked a very good question. You know, would I go back to my old life? No, I don't want to, because my old life taught me a lot. You know, it helped make me the person I am today, good and bad. You know, there are good things that that life taught me. But there are also bad things that life taught me. And when I came into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you helped teach me even better. You know, when you talk about step four with our character defects, you know, and this is more about alcoholism. So step four, it was good to do. It was a release of the soul. It was a release of the heart, the spirit, you know, that I know why I did those things, because I was sick at the time. Even before I drank, I was sick. And now that I know better, I can do better. But I don't want to do over, because I love the life I have today. I love living in the solution. I love, I'm not going to love the fact that I'm an alcoholic, but what I do is I appreciate it. Because there are many of us in this room who will actually reach a beautiful level of self-actualization. We're actually going to get to realize who we are, what we want, what our values are, our integrity, our honesty, our friendship, you know, getting to know someone without anything in return. You know, back in the day, if you were my friend, I would give you all these gifts and I expected things in return. That's not me anymore. That's not my heart. You know, my heart nowadays is to do the best I can in every condition, in every situation. This was the one I loved the most. And I made a note as Lisa was talking. You know, as I crossed the threshold of the dining room, and a thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails. Yeah, no, I don't need that. I don't need the cocktails. What I want is your love. I'm an orphan. And that's the one thing I have craved my entire life, is to be loved and to be wanted and to not feel like the black sheep of the family. And drinking is never going to make up that. What's going to make it up is me learning how to love myself. And that's more about alcoholism, because I never felt loved. And that's why I drank. And I used, and I did everything I did, because I didn't know what true love meant. But now I'm learning, because every one of you are teaching me how to be the woman that, you know, my higher power, God, Allah, call it what you want. We all have a higher power. But I'm learning to be the woman that I was intended to be. Not just that, but I'm learning to be the woman I want to be, you know? And I'm sorry, but I take a lot of advice from a member here, and her name is Joan, and she is the most beautiful soul I've ever known. And I take a lot of lessons from her. I take lessons from you. I take lessons from Lisa, Tracy, Trisha, Stacy, Carolina, every one of you. You're my family. And I now know that I will never die alone, because each and every one of you treat me as family. And so, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for teaching me how to love myself. Have a great 24.
Thank you, Joy. Good to see you here. Rita, come on in.
Hi, everybody. This is Rita, and I am an alcoholic. Thank you so much for buying Tooth Combing this book for me. It's one of my favorites. I remember the day when I used to prime myself with a shot of Jack before I'd do any house cleaning, right? Well, I remember the day when I took that drink and I had to have another one right away. And I thought, oh, help me. I'm in big trouble. But I drank for another entire year. I couldn't stop. I didn't know what to do. I tried to off myself, but that didn't work. And I yelled at God, well, what do you want from me then? So I knew, though, that at the end of that year, I couldn't, I just couldn't do this by myself. And I got down and surrendered. That was the best thing that I could have done, was to surrender. God, please help me. I don't know what to do. Well, I know I had to do detox for sure. That was a messy thing. And that was one of the things that was told me right away. You drink again, it's going to be worse next time. And I believed them. I truly believed them. So I came in to AA to learn, as willing as the dying could be, and I'm so grateful for that. Lost two siblings in sobriety. Had some very bad news about my older brother yesterday, and that's life on life's terms. I can't change what God's plan is. I can only choose to pray for acceptance of situations that come up in life. And I have all of you to thank because your guidance through the program and through the steps has definitely changed the way I think. So thank you so much for letting me share.
Thank you, Rita. Good to have you here. Stacy, come on in.
Hi, I'm Stacy. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you so much for going through the big book with us once again on Saturday, even though you're sick, Lisa. Here on page 37, a lot of times you hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, you hear, well, think through the drink. Just think yourself through the drink. But it tells me right here, it says that I have curious mental blank spots. How can I think myself through the drink when I have curious mental blank spots? That doesn't make sense. And I must tell myself the lie in order for me to drink. And that's what happens to me is I forget about everything. I forget about the teaching. I forget about the book. I have to, because I have to tell myself the lie before I take the drink. And I love what Joe and Charlie says. They said, I cannot get myself off me. I need God to get me off of me. Even the human power can't do that. I can't get myself off of me. I'm always on self. On page 38, a friend of mine, I called him one time. Well, actually, it's the guy that teaches the big book to us. And he had me write down this on page 38. Can I see the truth about alcoholism? No, because it keeps changing. It keeps changing. Anytime I think, okay, well, I think I'm on the right track now. I think I got it, especially when I'm doing it by myself. Alcoholism will keep changing for me. It'll turn into some other obsession. It'll turn to some other clue in my life will happen. Next thing you know, I'm messing with my career. Next thing you know, I'm messing with my kids. Next thing you know, I'm messing with my finances. I'm taking something else over from God that I don't need to take over from Him. Alcoholism will keep changing in my life. My mind no longer says to me, go have a drink, because they know, my mind knows exactly. I'm gonna go and I'm gonna go to a meeting. I'm gonna go call my sponsor. I'm gonna write an inventory. All those things that happen. But it will say to me, hey, let's go spend $5,000 on a credit card because we really need that thing. Really. My mind, the alcoholism in my mind keeps changing. And I love what they say in another program. When it ain't about the drink, it really is about the drink. Because if I think about it, my mind will go worse and worse. My life will get worse and worse. And then finally, I'll feel like, hey, it's time for me to take a drink. I know what will cure the big hurt. And the last thing that I wanted to say is I wanted to talk about how this plain insanity here on page 41, it talks about. It says, no, I'm sorry. I wanted to talk about on page 40. When he talks about, let him tell you about it. And I numbered those. He's not being arrogant. He's not being arrogant at all. He thinks that he can solve his problems with a simple act of self-knowledge. He thinks that. The newcomer, that's why that the whole first 60 pages of the big book, not talking about the prefaces, not talking about the first, not talking about the front part of the book or Bill's story. The first 60 pages of the big book is talking about steps one and two, because we have to convince the newcomer that they are alcoholic and that they need a higher power. A higher power is not my sponsor. A higher power is not a person. It cannot be a person. Now, I guess some people can deal with a doorknob. I guess that's fine for them. But I always say I can take the doorknob off and toss it somewhere and get rid of it. I always say somebody could cut my tree down, and the next thing I know, I go to worship my tree and it's not there anymore. That's just for me. I always say, I think Bill said it really good. Power of the universe, star of the heavens, anything that you can use to help you get to a power greater than yourself. And I just love the fact that we sit in the solution today. In the solution is very important. And always remember that alcoholism changes, especially as I stay sober. It changes. So thank you guys for allowing me to share. And I'm so grateful I'm in the solution and in this big book study. Thanks.
Before you close your book and unmute, can you tell me, you said I numbered them. What did you number, and can you take us through that, please?
Sure. On page
Thank
40,
you.
it says, let him tell you about it. One, I was much impressed with what you fellows said about alcohol. And two, I frankly did not believe it would be possible for me to drink again. Three, I rather appreciated your ideas about the subtle insanity, which I circled, which precedes the first drink. But four, I was confident it could not happen to me after what I had learned. Five, I reasoned I was not so far advanced as most of you fellows. That six, I had been usually successful in licking my other personal problems. And that seven, I would therefore be successful where you men had failed. Eight, I felt I had every right to be self-confident. That nine, it would only be a matter of exercising my willpower, and 10, keeping on guard. Now, when we have a person standing in front of us with that kind of arrogance, we're like almost like, get the hell out of my damn house. But they're not doing it arrogantly. What they're doing is they're using the same control and self-will and self-knowledge to against an illness. So imagine if you said the same thing on them pages. They say, you have lung cancer, and they use that same paragraph. You think them crazy, right? Well, they're doing the same thing with alcoholism. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Stacy. Appreciate it. Carolina, smiling away at getting the knowledge.
Hi everyone, Carolina, alcoholic. Thank you, everybody who's doing the service. Oh dear, self-knowledge. I was brought up in alcoholic family, so I experienced alcoholism of my mother and alcoholism of my father. So, I had a lot of experience and knowledge about this disease, but my denial was so much stronger, I could justify the way of my drinking, and I love how he uses words here all the time. Self-knowledge, I've learned, I reason, my frame of mind, everything is like I know better, like I know better. And I'm thinking, oh, are they talking about Fred or are they talking about me? All the time. And I've experienced something very insane about 2 weeks ago. I don't want to drink now. But I had that, you know, there was no cloud or on the horizon, you know, in London, UK, which is very unusual. You know, sunny sky. And I'm thinking, yes, off I go. You know, I don't need to drink, but I can go back to my old ways, to my old behavior, you know, and I can burn my life to grounds without even drop of alcohol. And I realized, wow, like, and I think on page 36, there's this one sentence in italic which says, suddenly the thought crossed my mind, and that's what happened to me, just like that, you know. Off you go. And you know what? I did something so like out of order. I called my sponsor, which, you know, like few months ago, I'd never ever do that, but I called my sponsor. And you know, I realized now that that insanity, you know, will not leave me. May leave me today if I'm at, you know, if I'm quite spiritually fit, but you know, I wake up tomorrow and again, you know, might be beautiful, might be raining, and I will have that one little thought. And I feel like when I have that thought, it just goes, you know, it's like it speeds up, you know, and it's just not possible to stop. And I need to learn and get the tools to be able to stop. So yeah. And I wrote this one more sentence here. This on page 42, like mid page, this process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I could do the job myself. And it calls here about, you know, when we just flick the candle. And when I struggle with God, and sorry for cross-training, Stacey, I didn't believe in no, but my sponsor asked me to choose my conception of God. So I was so, you know, full of myself. I said, okay, I will pray to pink flip-flops. Okay. She said, fine. I was like, fine, I pray to fucking flip-flops. So that's how I started. But then still, when life got really difficult, when I had to move house, you know, I could not grasp that my conception of God, you know, I didn't want to have God of my upbringing. And my friend, he said something to me. He said, Carolina, what you cannot candle, you can give it to your little candle. And you know, since that day, I have my special candle. My family, we call this holy fire. And you know, I come home, and this is first thing which I do. It's like I put that fire. Of course, I don't believe in candle. I believe in God, but it sort of it makes me. I know I am powerless over, you know, fire. He can. Fire can keep me warm, but also can burn me to ground. So sort of that's what helped me to sort of go forward and establish my own relationship with God. So thank you.
I love it. I love, you know, it was Carolina who we were talking about a God box, and she told me that she calls it her God can. So she has a God can instead of a God box because God can. I can't, God can. So thank you for that gift. Heather, I saw that you had your hand up. There is no time in this meeting.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought here's time, and I was trying to be a little humble.
Yeah, people can leave if they want to, but you can, we will take all the shares that are necessary.
Well, I thank you for that, and I thank you for this beautiful meeting. Like, oh my gosh, this is my favorite. Like, I love that you guys have done this, and all your wisdom and knowledge just helps me to continue to grow along my spiritual lines here, because I have a lot to learn, and I think I know I will always need to be learning and growing. I love those numbers. That is just like, it's like, wow, so powerful. And everybody shares so far. I really identified with all of it, of course, because I thought this book was written for me by the time I got to it, you know, because I really thought I was unique. And I'll never forget my sponsor telling me that I was not unique, and I tried to reason with her that I really was. So she didn't understand like how unique I like really seriously this is fundamentally mental. And she reassured me once again, you're not. And I was so relieved because I thought I was insane. I didn't realize that I was insane, but it's like a contradictory thing. I thought I was in, I knew that I had some problems, but I didn't understand really what insanity was. So I really resonated with, let's see. I felt I had every right to be self-confident that it would only be a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on guard. I truly believed that this was going to be a way I could do this different another time. I was so delusional. And I remember the moment that it happened for me where I was able to see the forest through the trees as I went into a detox while I went into rehab, and I had my keys in my hand, and I told my husband, I'm either going to go back out to the liquor store or I'm going to continue to the bitter end drinking. And I had that moment that I knew, or I was going to, I was going to drink to the bitter end, or I needed to be locked up. I had that moment in time where I truly knew there was no third solution, because for a long time, I really thought I could do it different. And I thought that I wouldn't be relieved of these feelings that I had. And I really identify with that self-pity and just getting into that sense of only thinking of me in the selfishness way of life that I had, and everybody was, I was the victim. And I realized in Alcoholics Anonymous, I made myself the victim, you know, by not showing up and then victimizing myself, not taking the right action. In here though, I went to treatment. I called a friend and she took me in. And of course I wanted to do what every good alcoholic does and wants to stop at the liquor store on the way to rehab. I don't know if that's just me, but I really wanted to go. And she said, no, I will take you to McDonald's and get you some French fries. And then we can go in, but I'm not taking you to the liquor store. And that was a good thing. But when she took me in, I think I was still really apprehensive about the idea that this was going to somehow help me. I knew I needed to be locked away, but I didn't like it when I got there. And I justified my way out of there. I'm like, they don't have ice. Their water machine's broken. They don't have Xanax. Like, and not to cross substance, but I was like, I could detox way better by myself, right? That's the belief I had because I tried it for 28 years and that never worked. So, they said, your insurance will not cover your time here if you leave within the first 72 hours. And I was like, well, shoot, I've been saving for countertops for a while now. And, you know, what am I going to do with that? And I was sitting in a meeting, or I was sitting in like one of their meetings that, so I decided to stay sitting in the meeting, and they talked about, and I'd heard this in the rooms before, anything you put ahead of your sobriety, you will lose. And I was thinking, gosh, what a bummer. I'm not going to be able to pay for these countertops because I'm going to have to pay for rehab. And like that moment, and the second moment of clarity was really truly like, so I knew I had no choice. And then that second moment of clarity was like, oh my gosh, I realized I will not have a house. It won't be countertops because that's not going to fix anything. It's not going to be, I won't have a house. I won't have my children. I won't have my husband. I had no idea they were already on their way out. They were already going to leave. I did not know. No one gave me an ultimatum. I didn't do this for anybody else except for I knew I had two options and there was no third after all those years. So when I was sitting in there and I heard that we were doing an exercise, and I think I've shared this about how much I've spent on alcohol, and it was, you know, I wasn't going to be able to afford my drinking anymore. And I got so though excited about the fact that I was going to do this, that I had like this overkill of joy and excitement for this program. And that is what lit me on fire, was just the understanding of knowing that, you know, this can work for me, God can work for me, and that I do not have to do this alone. And it's like my sponsor says, you know, you go to sleep, you know, and we do the steps again, and we wake up and we have a spiritual awakening. But my spiritual awakening was in that moment. And when I was locked up and was able to really know that anything I put ahead of my sobriety would, I'd lose. So I just thank you, ladies, so much, and men, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. You guys are just a beautiful group of people. So thank you for letting me unravel. Thank you.
Well, hopefully not unravel.
No unraveling,
Sharing.
just sharing
Yes.
in a ADHD kind of way. Thank you very much.
This is perfect. Thank you, Heather. Dawn, a dude, some tea, some testosterone. Bring it.
Some misogyny, go away, be afraid.
No.
Oh my goodness, yeah, Don, alcoholic, great day to be sober. If I cough or whatever, I just ate something that it appears that there's something in it that I've got a little allergy to, so it's closing up my throat a little bit. So I apologize for that. Yeah. Starting off on page 37. Man, that's a good page. That is a good page. And the thing I like on 37, there was little or serious effective thought during the period of premeditation. And that of what the terrific consequences would be. That word premeditation, and I've come to learn I can look at it in two different ways. And one is premeditation, by definition, is a state, is planning something ahead of time. And when I go back out to drink, I would tell you over and over and over again that I didn't plan to drink. I didn't plan on drinking. Do you know what? I did. I did. I wouldn't admit it to you. What that takes me to is it takes me back to what I say I was on page 23. And page 23 is the page that I like to call, and this is my own name, All About Triggers. It tells me all the excuses that I am satisfied with that are the reasons that I drank. That is 23 is my all about triggers. If I have a trigger, it better be on my fourth step, So premeditation, I used to plan to drink, but I would tell you I didn't plan. So somewhere along the way, I've got to get honest with myself. And just like Fred, I had to come to that realization that I was beaten, that I was beaten, and that I had no more fight in me. And that was not something I decided. That was just something that happened. I had no more fight in me. I wanted that jumping off point. Now, the other really neat thing about that word premeditation is if I take the word pre means before. So little serious effective thought before meditation. So just like the book, all the way through, a problem is presented, a solution is presented. Later on in the book, there is action that makes that solution come to life, and then there's promises. This period of premeditation, we already went over it. It's that subtle insanity which precedes the first drink. If we go back to page 157, when Bob and Bill were in the middle of with Bill D in the hospital, AA number three, there was much talk about the mental state that precedes the first drink. That's all the premeditation. And then the solution to my problem, I find on page 87, when we start our day, upon awakening, we think about the 24 hours ahead. We ask, we pray. There is my solution. I learned to believe, as was already brought up. I had to come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Sanity is not, it simply means soundness of mind. I will use that with men that I work with. Don't get caught up with sanity, insanity, because then the intellect comes in. Insanity is a legal term, blah, 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 blah. And it's used all over the book. But sanity meaning soundness of mind, rational thought. Golly, the ability to just simply choose today that I am so grateful for. so grateful for. So, premeditation, what a heck of a word. And when it comes to Fred or Jim or any of these other guys in the book, man, I got stories that I can relate dead on. You might as well change them all to Don. Thanks for letting me share with y'all. It's good to be here.
Thank you, Don. We like it when we get a nice mix of people in here. It's always a little, there's always the some of the regulars, there's always a few different people. So today I'm going to do something different and close with the Dr. Bob's prayer. I'll put that on the screen for you guys. Dr. Bob's third step prayer, because I never hear anyone pick this one. It's on our list, but I've never heard anyone pick it in the meeting, but I'm not at all the meetings, so maybe it has been picked. If I don't know, Trisha, if everyone can unmute, you can do it, make it so that everyone can unmute themselves if you want to say it along with me. This is Dr. Bob's third step prayer. Dear God, I am sorry about the mess I've made of my life. I want to turn away from all the wrong things I've ever done and all the wrong things I've ever been. Please forgive me for it all.
Please forgive
I
me.
know you have the power to change my life and can turn me into a winner. Thank you, God, for getting my attention long enough to interest me in trying it your way. God, please take over the management of my life and everything about me. I am making this conscious decision to turn my will and my life over to your care, and I'm asking you to please take over all parts of my life. Please, God, move into my heart. However you do it is your business, but make yourself real inside me and fill my awful emptiness. Fill me with your love and Holy Spirit and make me know your will for me. And now, God, help yourself to me and keep on doing it. I'm not sure I want you to, but do it anyhow. I rejoice that I am now a part of your people, that my uncertainty is gone forever, and that you now have control of my will, my life. Thank you, and I praise your name. Amen.
Amen.